Good afternoon. I hope you had a good lunch and you feel settled. And hope I won't send you to sleep this afternoon. Always a danger after lunch. So this afternoon I'm going to cover three more things. I'm going to cover C# and XAML, programming C# and XAML. The second thing is I'm going to cover is a run around the RT itself. So look around RT. And see what function, what support you get out of RT and how it actually works under the cover. So I'm going to have a look at some of the code in that. And then finally look at the store. So is that the right sort of thing? Is that the sort of thing you're looking for this afternoon? Am I going enough detail, fast enough, slow enough? I know I'm speaking English rather quickly. I apologize for that. I will try and slow down. It's a trait I have. I tend to speed up.
Maybe some more code is there?
More code. Yeah, we're going to do a bit more code. Okay. All right, just to start off with, though, this is a demo that I couldn't get to work earlier, but it's now seems to be working, so I'll show you. This is actually Visual Studio Blend, the beta version. And it's now got a lot more functionality in it in terms of being able to see what's happening inside your application. So here, for instance, this is the Contoso cookbook, and you can see I can click on any element within here, and I can go and see it actually has a live DOM for exactly what's inside the picture you're looking at. And so you can literally click around in here, see exactly where all the elements are coming from, yeah, and be able to modify those elements over here in the properties side of things. Okay. The other nice thing about it is that it is actually also running the program itself as well. So when you go into interactive mode, then what it actually does, it's actually running the script behind it. So you can actually use it and you can click on it. Okay, it will actually now go run the program and bring up the new page here. And you then come out of interactive mode, and then again you can go and actually have a look at that page and see what's actually happening within that page. So it's actually running the real program behind it. What it's actually doing, what we've done here is we're integrating Visual Studio and Blend very much more closely together. So that in this particular instance, Blend is calling out of Visual Studio, running the program, and then coming back in again. and actually, you can do the same thing from Visual Studio as well. So again, you can now go into this lower level, click around anything you like in here, see the properties of it, see where it's coming from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So from a design tools perspective, it's giving you a lot more information. It's also using the real code underneath to make sure that what you're seeing is actually what you actually get on the real screen. So, it's really pretty impressive for a tool. And, of course, the other nice thing about this is the Express Edition. The Express Edition is of course, free. So you get all this functionality for free along with Visual Studio Express Edition as well. So I just wanted to show you that as the back end of the last session, right? So, just shut that down. Okay, so now I'm going to look into first section this afternoon, which is Metro Style Apps with XAML and C#. What do .NET developers need to know? What additional things do not .NET developers have to do? Well, basically, the key thing here is that you already have, as I said this morning, you already have all the skills you need to build the Metro-style apps with C# and VB as well. Right? So pretty much everything you're doing today in .NET just moves straight across. There's very little difference. There are a few keywords that are slightly different between the two. But pretty much all the concepts, most of the semantics are the same between the two. So first of all, we're going to look at the actual calls out to WinRT itself. So if you're actually now going to be using WinRT rather than .NET, what's the difference and how does that look? So Windows, we've always provided a lot of additional functionality in terms of runtimes and so on and so forth for the developers, and what we've done in Windows 8 is we've sort of taken those the next step forward and provided more functionality over above what you would get out of .NET itself. Okay? Yeah, this is also true. So And providing you've stayed within the sort of .NET framework, you've been pretty safe, and we've provided the sort of functionality you need. But of course, as soon as you get outside that, then things get pretty unpleasant pretty quickly. So if you actually want to go and make lower-level Windows calls, if you want to go and access device drivers, you want to access cameras and stuff like that from C#, that actually gets pretty unpleasant, as I say. So for instance, you know, if you want to go and create a camera capture, this is the sort of code you have to end up writing, right? Because you actually have to go out to the device driver itself. You have to manipulate strings and pointers to make sure you're pointing to the right place. It's unpleasant. It takes a lot of time and is a very buggy type process. You're going to end up with a lot of learning that you don't particularly want to have to go through, and so on and so forth. So what we've tried to do is we've tried to get around that by providing a lot more wrappers in WinRT for this sort of functionality. So what we've done, as I say, is you know, traditionally you've had your managed code, and you wanted to access standard Win32 type API, and of course you've had to write all this, the code I was showing you a moment ago, a lot of manually generated interoperability code. I effectively write shims all the time to get through to the things underneath. So in C# on WinRT, what we've done is we've provided a lot more functionality to access those lower-level drivers. So we've provided a whole load, level within WinRT, which sits between you and the lower-level Windows calls. So this, for instance, is how you would go and access the same sort of card camera. And you can see up at the top there, we've got a Windows Media Capture library call up there, and then you've just got literally photo settings, and then you do the capture file async down below, and you can see we're using both the async and the await in there. Again, we're waiting for the camera all the time, and then you just put the bitmap image up on the top. So it's very, very quick, very, very simple, and very logical for somebody who's done a lot of C# programming. Okay, so what we've done is we've taken your code, and we now put the Windows runtime between it and the Windows APIs underneath. So, and that's done to this thing we're calling language projections, right? So these shims are all put together, and providing that orange layer there, which takes your code and actually creates all the wrappers and the projections that are needed in order to call into the lower level functionality. So, obviously, if you want to call into any of the UI controls, the pickers, media controls, XAML storage, any of those sort of things, then we're providing projections for all those things from WinRT, so that you can actually just go and make those WinRT calls and access the lower level functionality without having to write your own code. Okay, so actually using the runtime then therefore feels very natural for C# VB. You're just making standard C# type calls and down into the lower levels, right? So let's go and have a look at this from C#. Oops. Okay, so. So, for instance, I talked a moment ago about actually capturing camera input. So here's an SDK sample for capturing camera. Let me just fire it up and so you can see what it actually does, and then I'll show you what the code looks like underneath, right? So this allows you to capture the photo from the webcam or a video. Let's just capture a photo. Okay, and it goes straight into the camera system itself. It's got a picture of me. What's that? Something on the wall behind me. And you have a set of options that come up here. So you have a timer that's built in, you have a set of camera options, or you can just click on the middle of it and take the picture. Not a very good picture. You can do some scaling. That'll do. And then you can click OK, or you can click Retake. That takes the picture. Okay, so it's very, very simple. Let's go and have a look at the code underneath for that. Oops, escape. So here's the code. and you can see in here that here's the button click. Again, exactly the same from the way we've done it in the past. We have a Kamikaze UI here. We set up the settings. It's actually the same as the code in the slide, pretty much. And then you wait for the file to come back from the capture. And if it's not null, then you just go and put it up on the screen. Here is a part of bitmap image. So you can see that like there's about two lines of code in there, three lines of code. And you can see the sort of functionality that Windows is giving you. It's giving you timers, it's giving you the ability to video, it's giving you the ability to do settings, retake, and so on and so forth, all in these two lines of code. Yeah, go ahead.
What about live view on the camera?
Yeah, it'll do that as well. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't demonstrate that because I think I look bad enough anyway without having a video of me. Yeah, it'll do video, yeah. No, okay, yeah, it'll do that as well. And in fact, this is actually just part of a whole media stream. You know, there's a whole series of different things you need to be able to do in terms of media, in terms of streaming, and so on and so forth. And this is actually just one element of that. And all of those, we're providing all of those right from beginning to end, the whole media capture stream. Yeah, and so you can do things. You can effectively send it somewhere else. You know, there's a lot of you can put filters in, you can use different codecs, all that stuff is available. I just showed the really simple stuff here. Yeah, go ahead.
What happens between the asynchronous code and the file not before now?
So basically all that does, and I'll come on to that. I'll come on to that in a minute if I may. But basically what it's doing is it actually just pages it. It effectively stops processing at that point. But I'll cover it in a lot more detail in a moment. So, as I said earlier, pretty well everything maps straight across between .NET and the Windows runtime. So, you know, all the primitives, the interfaces, the structures, delegates, classes, all that stuff maps straight across. So anything you're using in that space goes across. And most of the differences, and there are a few little differences, are hidden. So you don't ever get to see them or have to worry about them. But, you know, occasionally that you may come across them. Let me just... So, for instance, there's a set of equivalences which are not quite the same. And Visual Studio kicks in here and does this translation for you. So these things, for instance, IEnumerable, ILIST, IRead-only, right, from the .NET world, actually map to iterable, iVector, iVectorView in the RT world, right? So they are slightly different. Actually, what happens is that Visual Studio does that mapping for you. So you don't even have to worry about that. It'll actually just map the stuff across. And there's a very few of them anyway, but most of them are mapped across. Just telling you, in case there's something that you wonder what's going on under the hood, and it doesn't work properly. And then, as I say, the extension method bridges the gap between the runtime and the managed code. So what happens is you call into the runtime, the runtime calls out to .NET, in fact, and then these methods sit in the middle between the two. So here's a stream code sample, and this is where we're pulling in input stream from a file. So we pick a file here, and then standard stream reading down at the bottom there. Again, important to note that these are all async calls. So pick single file async, you know, and awaits the wait keyword in there again. Pretty well all met. You look at any Metro code, it's got a lot of async stuff in there always.
What happens if you don't put the await keyword?
It runs as synced, yes. And that's not a good idea.
Right.
Because then the thing will just block, right? Okay.
Will it give you a warning?
I don't know, actually. No, I think the does it? Yeah, yeah. Okay. So as I say, these shims that are sitting between are actually provided and held in this in Windows MD in the metadata file. You can actually go and look at the metadata file, crack it open, and have a look what's inside it. But you can see it's mainly information that the compiler and Visual Studio know in order to tie everything back together again. So because of this, because we're wrapping up your code with the Windows MD, you can actually then go away and take your piece of code and actually create a component from that. And I think I talked about that this morning a little bit. But it's actually very simple to do, and you can do it from any language to any other language. So any language can pick up any other language and use that as a component. There are some restrictions to that. First of all, these are pretty much them public, and they're fairly obvious, right? You have to have public signatures. Windows RT types. Only can have public data fields. You must have sealed controls, right? You can only use inheritance in XAML. You can't use inheritance in any of your C#, right? And that's pretty obvious because these become components, so you can't actually inherit fields because they're components unless it's specifically passed over. And the use system provided generic types. So a very, very simple set of rules. One of my personal ones is the favorites is the third one down about inheritance. I actually don't like inheritance very much. I think it causes lots of issues. So the fact that we're actually forcing you not to be able to do it, I think is a good thing, although of course it breaks object orientation as such. But it actually does make the code rather more robust, in my opinion. Very often people forget what's being inherited by what. It's quite interesting because the last production system I built quite a while ago now was actually a very complex system and was written in C++, and it was a parallel operating system, in fact. And the only way we had a team working on it for like 2 years, and we could never stabilize the code. And in the end, the only way that I actually managed, I got Ben Gupta in charge of it. You know, one of these things, the project had gone wildly badly wrong. And I got told to look after it and sort it out. And the only way we could really do it, because of the way that the system itself was working, was to go in, and I found that there was, you know, a ton of problems with inheritances all over the place and so on and so forth. So I actually forced them back into a sort of very C-type programming model. And that actually stabilized the code, and we managed to ship it out. But that's why I've always been a little nervous about that ever since, because it can cause a lot of issues. And in fact, I was rather proud of that system because about 5 years later, I got a letter saying that it had the highest reliability of any IBM system at the time. It had been running for 5 years without any maintenance, without any downtime, zero downtime for 5 years. So I was fairly, and it was a very complicated system. It had a 64 processors in it. So it is possible to write very reliable code, but you really have to be very careful. And a lot of the shortcuts, I think, that are used by application programmers today can cause all sorts of issues. Anyway, just a little soapbox there. So I've talked a lot about async already and how you need to make sure everything's async. So I'm going to cover that in more detail and answer the question about what actually happens. Okay, so if you have a modern application which is connected, especially over the internet, you've pretty well got to use async because you can never guarantee that the internet's going to be there. So it's becoming much more common, but of course there are some downsides with that. You do have to think quite a lot about what happens in the cases where you didn't actually come back. And so we've put a lot of support in here to make async very simple, but and at a programming level, that's great. But it does mean that you do have to think about what's happening, you know, and you do have to think for your specific application what happens in the cases where the code doesn't return, and make sure that you cover all those cases. So, say, basically the difference between the two, and again, this talks about what you were looking at a moment ago, is here we are, we have a download data, that's synchronous clearly, and if you want to make it asynchronous, you just use the asynchronous call, and that just makes it asynchronous. So at that point, the system will not block. Okay, so say with the synchronous call, you know, you don't go to download the data, then you're waiting. So effectively, you're blocking your thread until you actually get the data back, and then the thing starts off again. So during this period, you're actually blocked, and you're using resources, of course. So, you know, that tends to make the machine slow down and so on, and then continues. With the asynchronous version, okay, so, you know, you do the asynchronous call, you get the data back, and in between that point, the machine can continue to process, right? So other things will kick off, and other processes will get in, so the machine can continue to work and doesn't block on those threads. As I say, it does mean you have to think a bit more carefully about what's happening with your thread, and what actually happens on the cases where the system doesn't return properly. But in the simple case, when you're doing demos like this, it's really easy because you just put async in there, and then you tell everybody it's really easy to do it. But actually, if you're writing real production systems, you do have to go and think about it. One of the things you very quickly find is that you have to start thinking about which threads are getting blocked and which are not. And we do actually provide some additional support in, not in the Express version of Visual Studio, but the professional SKUs and so on and so forth. They actually have put in there the ability to go and see what threads are running and what threads aren't running. So you'll have like a little thread window, and it shows when you do an async, it shows the threads that are being created and where they're going to. And it's quite useful because it gives you a better idea, a graphical representation of what's happening within the processes inside the machine. But as I say, it's in the simple case, it's very easy. You do have to think a little bit more carefully about what happens when things fail. Okay, and these are the asynchronous calls that you can make. Windows runtime, async, net frameworks, task of T, JavaScript of promises. And these are all objects, constructs representing ongoing operations in an asynchronous manner. They all use callbacks, obviously, to signal completion. So when it completes, you get a callback. Of course, the thing about callbacks is that you effectively end up with a little state machine that you've got to run through, and we actually do help with that as well, right? So we actually help in doing automatic transformations for these callbacks. Okay, so that's what that says, yes. So you end up with this little callback state machine of everything that's going on inside the machine. And these are, again, some asynchronous methods. Okay, you have the async call in there, and then you have the await keyword at the back end there. Okay, and that's actually the code that's generated underneath. Okay, so underneath you get this client get async URL here. This is actually where the call's made. Okay, as I said, you mark it with async as a modifier, and it must return either a void, which is what I always do in these demos, of course, or a task that's going to continue with execution of. Okay, and use the await operator to yield control to the other threads. And then again, resumed when the operation completes, and you then can continue. Okay. It says at the bottom, it feels just like synchronous code, but it isn't. So again, just be careful and think about what's actually happening. How many people here have done multi-threaded programming as a matter of interest? That's a lot. That's a lot. You guys understand the issues there. It's you forget, you know, you forget what's going on sometimes, and you have to go back around. I used to do a lot of operating system work design, and of course, operating system is all asynchronous, so it's like you spend your whole time trying to work out what's going on. And what's even worse, which he doesn't really talk about here, is that actually debugging these sort of things is actually quite difficult, because anything you do tends to affect the way that the asynchronous model is working. So again, I can show you the debugger, but in my experience, when you have a problem with an asynchronous call, you just have to sit there and look at it until you've worked out what's going on. Because as soon as you fire the debugger up, and then because it's a time-based problem, right? You actually modify the debugger modifies the timings, and hey presto, it works a different way. So, as I say, I love demoing this stuff, and I quite like debugging it. But basically, debugging is just sitting and looking at the code, right? Okay, so let's go and have a look at some of this and what it actually looks like. So the first thing, what I'm going to show you is I'm going to show you an application that's been written and that actually uses these concepts and therefore doesn't block, right? So, and what it actually looks like from a user experience. And then we'll go and have a look at the code. So, this application is a movie finder application, and you can see that what it does is it comes up with a set of movies, and then it goes out to the internet, to Netflix, and tries to populate them, right? Mm-hmm. So if I click on one of them, you can see it's 251 titles, but it starts to populate them straight away. You can see up here at 40 titles, and basically, you know, it's still continuing to put them in, and I can just do this, I hit the right part of the screen. Even whilst it's repopulating the titles themselves, you know, you can still use the system. Right? It's now loaded them all up, but at the same time, it wasn't blocking my UI thread, so I could still move things around in the UI. And you can see now it's done those, and it will continue to load other things in the background. Okay. It actually knows where I'm clicking, so it will try and read those in more quickly. And you can see it reads them in as fast as it can, and but at the same time you can still scroll around without blocking the thread, even though it's actually working. The network is quite good, so if you've got a slow network, this demo works really well because it takes ages and ages for the things to come down. But you get the idea, right? So it's actually reading stuff off the internet. Because I'm using asynchronous calls in here, it actually allows me to keep going even though it's populating the data fields at the same time. So let me go and show you what the code looks like on this. Oh, this is another thing. I think I might have mentioned this earlier. Visual Studio also now supports Team Foundation Server, and it's as part of the free SKU. So this was actually under source control. Of course, I'm not logged in at the moment to my source control system, so it's actually doing the right things and saying you're checking stuff out, even though it's part of the source control system. So that's another thing that comes free as part of Visual Studio. And one other thing, actually, whilst we're here, whilst I remember. Is that we're also providing unit testing as well as part of a Visual Studio Express edition, which I think is a really good idea because, I mean, you know, who doesn't test their code, right? Don't answer that. So basically NUnit, or you can still use NUnit, but we're providing the same sort of functionality as part of Visual Studio. Again, this is actually, we were doing that before, but of course now it's part of the Express edition, right? So let's go and have a look at this application. And basically, it's coming in here through this page, I think. So here, okay, so this is where I'm declaring my data model. Here, okay. And then what I do is I just do an initialize async here. Okay, and then I go and tell it to go and load up my data model with the pictures that are coming down. With the await, this got with the await keyword on here. Okay, it's got some asynchronous computation in here, but you can see how easy it is to provide that asynchronous loading feeling to you, to the application, where things are coming down, and actually Windows RT is just taking control of all the rest of the stuff. Very little code involved, with the caveat I had earlier. Okay. So, quick recap over .NET. So basically, quick recap of WinRT APIs. It's very heavily influenced by C#, VB, JavaScript, and C++, actually also by .NET as well. It isn't .NET, but it looks very similar in lots of ways. It feels pretty well identical as far as C# or VB developers concerned, just a few changes. And then, say it allows you to build new components if you wish to do so. And the most important thing is you have to go and think about the async as well, although we do provide the keywords. So you, bottom line is you already have all the skills, the understanding, the knowledge you need in order to go and build Metro-style apps with C# and VB. There's very little else you need. You can actually go and build those applications today. We provide the controls, we provide all the functionality, and we provide the shims to get between you and the underlying operating system so that you don't have to mess around with a whole load of unpleasant lower-level code. So that's a quick run over the .NET side of things. Is there any questions? Go ahead.
So when writing production code, you need to do error handling. Like in the example you saw with the net with, just download some images from the internet. I don't have internet connection.
Right. That's off the ESP. What you do is you do it off the back of that await keyword.
Yeah.
Okay. So you fire off the await, and then you do the catch off that. I think I might have some code on that, actually.
So I'll do the try catch on the await?
Yes. Yeah, after that, yeah.
So, okay.
That's right. I do have some code I can show you. I'm not sure I can find it right now. there is some code in here. I can have a look at it and show you later.
Are
maybe.
You saying that it supports cross-threading try-catch?
No.
Because that's what I understood implied from this question.
Okay, no, I don't think it does that. Yeah, it's different. Sorry.
Right.
I misunderstood.
Okay.
No. Anything else?
If there is no shim.
Right. You can write the code the same way you used to write the code. Absolutely. Yes. So you can still call out. It's just we don't keep control of that. We don't know what's going on under there because we don't keep that the information you may need to have in there. We're not going to keep in the metadata. But yes, you can actually write your own. Yes. Okay. Yeah, there's the same patterns exist in C++. They're exactly the same in all three languages. Yes, yes.
But could it run something like this and you go to suspend mode?
Yes, that's right. You go to when. Okay. So if you're paged out, if you're waiting for something, and you go into suspend mode, then we keep keep a track of what state you're in, yes, when that happens, okay? So that's kept as part of the WinMD file. Then you come back, right? So what happens, you come back, and then we repopulate. You're talking about when you suspend, if you go off the page, for instance, right?
Yeah,
yeah, no, we keep that information. And then if you come back, so you get page back in, then we repopulate that one with the information. Yeah? Anything else? All right. Okay, so now I'm going to have a look at MetroStar development. I'm going to start off by looking at the tools side of things, which is what I was trying to load up a second ago. Okay, so I have the cookbook I was talking about earlier. I have it in Visual Studio. I'm just going to fire it up, and I've got a breakpoint set. Just stopping here, and you can see that as I said earlier, you have this ability for here to have the JavaScript Explorer, so you can actually go in and inject particular lines of code inside the JavaScript if you want. You also have this DOM Explorer as well, now as part of Visual Studio. And the DOM Explorer pulls up your HTML, allows you to click on the particular elements of the HTML, and you goes in and shows you the actual styles that are generating that underneath. Okay. And you can then navigate around the HTML DOM itself. And you can see what the actual attributes are for each one, right? And you can even see where the layouts look like. So there's a lot of additional information now as part of Visual Studio, so that allow you to be able to see what's going on inside the HTML. Okay. I'm just going to let this continue. And this goes back into the standard application. Oops, wrong one. Okay. The other thing that we're now providing, as I mentioned earlier on, is we actually provide a simulator as well. So if I stop this, okay. I can actually set not just the local machine, but I can actually do it on a remote machine, so I can actually debug through to my tablet if I want. And I can also set to the simulator. And the simulator will then start up. Now, the simulator is going to take a very long time on this machine, so I'm not sure I'm going to do that. I just want to get a result set. Hang on a second. Let me just see if the simulator will start. So you can see down here on the bottom the simulator starting up. So this is the simulator. And this is my application starting up inside the simulator. And what this does, eventually it'll get there. What it allows you to do is literally, this is a simulation of a tablet. It's actually using my machine internally. And then it gives you the ability on the left hand, on the right hand side here, to go and change elements of the simulation. So if I want to change the orientation, for instance, I can click on this. Sorry? Yeah, this is a really in the office I have a big powerful machine, but you know, you can't carry it on the road. This is a small machine. It's a little bit slower than I thought it was going to be. But you get the idea, right? It actually then simulates, and it will reformat, as you can see, for the different screen sides, right? For the different screen format. You can also do things like change the resolution. I'm not going to do that because it takes forever. It gives you an idea of the sort of things you can do. Yeah, and how you can look and see how your application's going to look. Okay, go ahead.
You did mention phone devices. How all this comes into a phone, just on tablets and desktops?
This is tablets and desktops. Yeah, this is not for the phone. There's an Express for the phone, yeah, for the Windows Phone. There's Express edition for that, yeah. But it's a different environment than this, right? Because it's using WinRT. Windows Phone doesn't have WinRT. Windows Phone uses .NET and XAML. So
Windows Phone currently is not running the Windows 8, right? It's running.
It runs Windows Phone. Windows CE 7. Sorry?
Is it going to be integrated with Windows 8?
That's a good question. I can't really comment on that. It's a future thing, so I can't really say it. In general, I can make a general statement, right? The general statement is, yes, we would like to integrate all of our technologies together in the fullness of time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and clearly, having two applications sets that are so different, it's clearly good if we can get the maximum amount of overlap out of both of them. Okay, but that's really all I can say. I can't say we are going to do this or I. But yeah, you know, it a lot of this stuff is very similar to the phone, but it is actually different to the phone as well. I actually sort of think that. A lot of the asynchronous stuff is the same as the phone as well, but I think that there are some significant differences between tablet form factor and the phone form factor. Some things that you're not going to want to do. I'm not quite sure how well things like the charms would work on a 3-inch device. I don't know. Where that's going, I genuinely don't know that. So. Okay, so that gives you an idea of the simulator. Let me just stop this before my machine really dies. The simulator actually, as I said, is actually running my own real desktop. And so you'll notice that it actually, when it's fired up, it actually continues to run. And I can actually shut down Visual Studio and it will continue to run. This is a separate application itself. So that's because I'm still running the application, I suspect. Yeah, so when I shut down the simulator, I actually got an error back in Visual Studio because the simulator is actually a completely separate piece of code that's being fired up and running, right? just need to. That's one second. I just need to. So I just needed to find some points in the code. Right. So I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail about the tool set. I just wanted to give you a quick flavor. This isn't really about the tool set. This is really about Windows 8, Metro design. But I just, as I say, gives you a quick idea, quick recap on the tools. We now have Blend as part of the Visual Studio tool set as well, so you get the view in the Blend. You also get the simulator. So now you can have a much better idea of what the code's going to look like, and you're going to have a much better idea of how it's actually going to work when you start translating things around. We have a lot more ability to go and explore into things like the DOM Explorer and the JavaScript console, so you can actually go and inject code into it. Unit testing is now part of the Express Edition, as is TFS as well. So quite a lot more in the tools, especially when you consider they're free. Right? So you know, you just download them for the web, and you can download these today anyway. Go ahead.
So how exactly is the simulator in terms of, can I count on it to be exactly like the production system? I don't have to check one.
The simulator is actually the production system. So what it actually does is it remotes out and back in to your console. So you know I showed the remote. I said, hey, I can connect to a remote machine and then run my code on the remote machine. That's actually what it's doing. Yeah. So it's identical to your machine that you're running on. Okay? If you see what I mean. Very good question.
Even though the API say it should work like this, it's often not the case.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally understand what you mean. Yes, it is. I understand it's a big problem. And we understand that problem. And if you notice on the phone, we actually have a thing called a chassis spec, where we say, you have to have this particular hardware set up. Right? So we've been much more prescriptive on the phone in order to get around some of those problems. Whilst people can build whatever they like under Windows, we will try to make sure that hardware vendors and driver people writing drivers actually meet our specification. Okay, i.e. they meet such that it actually works to whatever controls we've got in there. And we also believe, to a certain extent, that if we do have a set of controls that we are asking everybody to adhere to, it's a lot easier for us to go and talk to the hardware manufacturers and the device drive people and say, look, you really should meet this, right? And try and make sure we get a lot more, a lot less of the sort of problems you're talking about. So we are really well aware of that one. There's a while yet before the systems actually start coming out. We're working very closely with the hardware vendors at the moment, so those systems, when they come out, will meet our specs. That's beautifully said, actually. I'll repeat that line. It's a while before the hardware comes out, and we are working very closely with any of the hardware vendors, in particular in the ARM space, who are going to produce hardware to make sure that the hardware meets our specifications. Yeah? Because it's a nightmare. Totally agree. Go ahead.
Windows SDK, is also supporting the Windows 8? The new Windows SDK is going on. I mean, the question is whether the new versions of Windows SDK are going to be the Win SDK of Windows 8?
don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that one. I'm assuming so. There will be a new version of Windows SDK. I'm trying to work out whether there's going to be one or two. Do you know what I mean? We will still have Windows SDK for the desktop.
For
the desktop, right? We'll still have that. But I suspect, and I don't know for certain, but I think we'll probably have two. One for Windows 8, yeah, the Metro-style stuff. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, because to think about it, you know, the Metro-style stuff is going to end up on the ARM as well. Do you see what I mean? So we've got to have two, right? Got there in the end, yeah. Go ahead.
In general, do you expect desktop users on Windows 8 to use the desktop version you showed us, generally, and tablets to use the Metro style?
We believe that the Metro style will work but equally well, the classic style on both desktops and laptops and tablets. My personal opinion is that when I'm working on my big machine back in the office, I use the desktop version really. I don't use the Metro. Now, when I'm on the road or when I'm doing this, I use the Metro. It's really weird. You've got to try it, you know? It's the only way I can explain, because you sort of change, right? And so when I'm in the office, yeah, I just sit in the desktop mode. And what happens is when I fire up a program, I don't go to the start bar anymore, I just type it in. You probably noticed me do it a couple of times. What you end up doing is just type in the name of the program, right? And that's basically all you pen, and that's how I do it. I don't do anything else. But then as soon as you go on the road, as soon as I'm out, you know, and when I'm using a small machine, then I'm always, it's Metro, I'm using the Metro the whole time. So it is very odd. You don't, well, my personal message is such that, you have one operating system, but it actually meets both sets of requirements. Like when I'm in meetings and stuff like that, when I'm using Metro, and when I'm in the office, it's even down to the applications, because, for instance, Outlook is absolutely horrible in Metro, obviously. Outlook in the present version, of course. Office 15, it may well be different. But, you know, trying to hit Outlook on here is really irritating, right? So I tend to use the mail applications on here. And so when I go to a meeting, I take this, and I do my mail on this and the mail apps, and that works well. When I'm in the office, trying to do mail going back through my folders, because I've got a lot of mail in my folders, then I tend to use, you know, the desktop version, because it gives me a lot more ability to click through. So it's weird. You definitely have, or I personally have, two completely different ways of working, and the single operating system actually works for both, which is very nice.
So if you have a Metro app, if you develop a Metro app, you can have a link to it in the classic desktop?
Well, if you develop a Metro app, it automatically exists in classic, because all the applications are back on that start panel. So you always go back to the start panel to start something up. You could pin it. You can pin it in the classic, I guess, and call it from the classic, but from the desktop version. What happens when you run it from the desktop, it will just flip into Metro, right? Totally, yeah.
The Windows Phone follows the Metro guidelines only part. Right?
So Windows Phone it has the same Metro look and feel as Metro. It's not completely the same as Metro, no. So some of the stuff like the charms and stuff like that don't work in the phone.
Okay. And about the Windows Server. Usually what happens to Windows Server is actually that the UI of the desktop is are you going to follow the same?
Windows Server.
Like Windows Server 2008 look like.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. I can't remember if that's been announced or not yet. That's one of those ones I know the answer to, and I can't remember if it's been announced.
Your peer has announced it, so.
Yeah, thank you. yes, so let me be careful what I say. in general, in the past, as you say, our desktop on the server has copied the client. And so, yes, you end up with a metro on the server, which is a little odd, in my opinion. I think, to be honest, anybody who's running servers with UIs on them, you know, is like...
Because that part of the Winrt that makes sense, you know, asynchronous.
That's true. Stuff that's true. That's true. That's true. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. You can still run the RT without using the Metro desktop. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, it's a good question. I sort of think that they are going to, right? We've got the beta of the server out at the moment. I haven't looked at it, so I don't know. And I know I've seen some discussion around this, and I just can't remember what the answer. It's one of these cases where you read the discussion, and then you don't actually know what the final conclusion was. I'm sorry. I don't know if it's, well, I don't know where we are now. Go ahead.
What if I want to develop an application that's going to be suitable for both environments, for the classic and for a tablet, and on a desktop? Should I build two versions of my applications?
No, I think what I'd do is I would, it's difficult to know without knowing the application, really.
For instance, a mail client.
Oh, just right. Yeah, in that case, I do it for the Mac.
But if the user runs it on a desktop, it's less detailed.
Well, you could still build the details in, right?
It's not that intuitive with the mouse or the Metro.
Wait for Office 15, I guess, is the answer on that one. It will be in my opinion, you should, at that point, if it's something like that, you should build a single client. I think that there are certain instances where you're better off doing a desktop type application, Visual Studio. Right? That would make no sense whatsoever. You know. I think there's a gentleman who's doing some business intelligence work, and again, you know, if you're doing a lot of work actually visualizing it, then that's a good Metro application. But I think if you were going through the data in the back end, then you probably wouldn't do that in the desktop. If it's difficult for me to come up with an application which doesn't sort of fit into one of the two ways of working. So, you know, most like mail client or internet or something like that, that's definitely like consumer type applications, such as Metro. There are some things, you know, professional tools. That you probably want to run on desktop mode.
Like Visual Studio.
And I'm sort of thinking like AutoCAD and stuff like that as well. Although AutoCAD, actually, I think there is a big opportunity for a sort of AutoCAD Metro thing as well. But a classic AutoCAD, I think, would be difficult to do as a Metro application. Yeah. So, finite element analysis.
That's still you. If you're using Windows 8, you can use the principle of the Metro, you program it, and then decide the skin that you want according to the end user.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, I agree. And so whilst I'm saying, hey, you know what, you should go and build a Metro UI and use the Metro design principles, there's clearly going to be cases where you want to use WinRT, but you may want to not use our particular front end, right? An obvious one is games, right? The games, you want to use WinRT for the games, but you don't want to have the front end, all the WinRT front, the Metro front end. So you saw all the games. All the games do their own thing on the front end. They go straight to DirectX as well. So that's an obvious one. It depends, you know, on what it is you're trying to do. There are, I believe, a lot of opportunities in the sort of hybrid space. A lot of opportunities. So, you know, where, for instance, here's a classic one. I keep meaning to write so many of these things I want to write. Is, for instance, if you're doing sort of drawings work, so you've got something like AutoCAD, and you've got half the screen which has got AutoCAD on it, and then the other half is like a picker of some sort. And so you can envisage you're like walking around the office and you're trying to do a new office plan, you know, the chairs have moved. It'll be really, really, it'll be a really, really nice application. So there's a bunch of applications like that, which is sort of Metro. They don't necessarily meet that Metro style guide, but would be very, very nice applications because the form factor device suddenly opens up a whole new raft of applications. I'm rebuilding a boat, one of the stupider things I'm doing. So I have loads of drawings, and you go to, if you're remodeling a house or something like that, you spend half your life going to the builder saying, this is the drawing, right? And that's not what you've built. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll put another wall in there, sort of thing. And it's really nice to have that on the tablet. And there isn't really anything like that yet. There's just so many opportunities. I'm going to go on sabbatical and run something. Go ahead.
What about not Intel CPU? What will happen to this desktop application?
So, when we're running ARM, the desktop application won't work unless you recompile. If you recompile for ARM, but yeah, I mean, you know, if it's an application that's been compiled for 8.6, we can't do very much about that, you know.
Do you have prototypes on
that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, we've shown them. We showed ARM prototypes off about a year ago, running Office and things. I think we've shown quite a number of them now, and I think that the first ones will be out very soon, you know, for developers, for people to do development on, because clearly we've got to take all this. All these tools will work both on Intel and on ARM, right? So we will just be able to say, hey, you know what, compile for ARM, and then all the libraries and everything else, the Metro stuff, will all then just work, right? But it's easy to say it, but like anybody who's actually done these things, you actually want to go and try it, and you want to try it on a real ARM tablet. Until we have the actual ARM tablets running the operating system, then obviously people can't try their applications out, and that's what we all want to do. So we need to get tablets out very soon to people who are building applications so that they can check out on the ARM.
What about .NET and ARM? Will it require a recompiling?
Well, it'll have to be compiled anyway to go on, because you have to make some modifications to get it to work on WinRT anyway. Yeah, in theory you don't have to. I bet in practice you do. Well, no, the classic wouldn't work, right?
Without even recompiling.
No, because on the ARM. Yeah, you think about it. You go through WinRT. You have to go through WinRT, yeah, in order to get to the .NET, right? And so you're going to be making different calls at that point. So you need to recompile, at least. You need to change the code in order to run through WinRT, get it to work on ARM.
Is it automatically do the modification for the classic WinRT?
Sorry?
If I'm running a classic, if I have a classic .NET application, that one has these INums and all those names,
Is
it changed automatically by Visual Studio? Recompiling
it says because you can define the CPU type on Visual Studio. That's how you do it. Let me have a look. Here we go. I know. Let me have a look if ARM's in there or not. I don't know. I haven't looked, right? Yeah. There you go.
So if I'm putting a target machine ARM, it changes all those reservoirs.
It's there, so I've not tried it because I don't have an ARM machine myself. So. Okay, so that was the overview of the .NET story and XAML. Now we're just going to have a look at. That's where I was, isn't it? So I showed this, all these things, breakpoints, simulator for all languages, not that, filling apps. Okay, so we provide a ton of controls as part of Windows RT to do all the stuff that you need to do all the hard work underneath it. So first of all, we provide all these widgets, you know, combo box buttons, all those things. They all have standard implementations. They all have standard UI. They fit in with the Metro UI. So you can just call all these up. You know, the bars, the rings, the ratings, all those things. They're all in there. You just, as I say, you can just use them. We provide list views and grid views and flip views automatically. And I showed you this, the templates earlier on around some of those things. So those controls are built in for you, so you don't have to do any of that work. It's all done automatically. We provide the semantic zoom support as well, so you can actually just provide the two different views, and all the semantic zooming side of things is done automatically for you. So let me just go and show you that. Oh, no, that's not right. Okay, so that's strange. Now, I thought I could show you that, but I've lost it. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I've lost the control for that. There is a control for it in there, and I just can't seem to find it at the moment. the surfaces, so the app bar, again, we provide the app bar as part of a control. As a control, so you can just call that up. You don't have to do all the work. User controls, message dialogs, pop-ups, all those things that controls for. That's what I was going to show you. Actually, was there. Okay. seem to have lost the controls I was looking for. So we have a media, in terms of the hardware, and we had a quick talk about this earlier on, about how we support the hardware. We have this Windows Media Capture namespace, allows you to do camera capture, media capture. You can control, when you do the media capture, you know, you do have a complete media pipeline. You can decide what you want in the media pipeline, and we support, you know, all the standard formats, MP4, MP3, etc., etc. Various encoding, we can change the encoding in there, smooth streaming as well. We can go through different cameras, all that stuff is supported as part of the control. Right? So we've got timers, a lot of functionality in there, but of course you can go and write your own as well if you wish. There's no reason why not to. There's also a sensors namespace for all the sensors that, that we're going to support. Light, accelerometer, gyro, and this is an interesting idea. So the other thing is that you can actually take data from multiple sensors and then create new data, either better data or new data. So for instance, you can take information from an accelerometer and positional system, and you can actually then take information from both sensors, and you can actually then create a better information about any one of those areas. So if you have an inclinometer, for instance, if you have a altitude and accelerometer, then you can actually use the data from both of them to improve the resolution of each of them. So we call this fusion data, where we take data from various sensors and we fuse the data together to give additional information, right? So for instance, you can have things like device orientation, which you can improve, inclinometers, and so on and so forth. The way it works is to say you take information from something like the accelerometer and the gyro, and you actually pull that information together, and then you can improve the information that's about the accelerometer itself, right? You can take information from accelerometer, gyro, and magnetometer, and then that gives you information like a compass, an inclinometer. There's no such thing as an inclinometer sensor, but you can actually generate that from these other sensors that are in there, right? Device orientation is something else you can generate. And we provide all this for you, so there's a control for all these things. What we did is we got our Microsoft research people and said, you know, how can we improve the sensor information that's available? And they went away and they wrote a lot of algorithms to take the raw sensor data, improve that, and actually then come up with new functionality as well. And this is, say, called sensor fusion, right? Okay, touch side of things, and the whole touch in input. What we've done is that we actually use the same controls for touch, pen, mouse, and keyboard, all in the same one. So you can use any of those things, and they come back, as far as you're concerned, in your application as a single call, right? So you get all that information. You don't have to worry about whether somebody's touching the screen, whether somebody's calling it, whatever. That information just comes back, and we do all the hard work underneath. Yeah, that's right. Code for the touch, you get mouse and pen for free. It automatically comes in. So we have these pointer events. Yeah, go ahead. So we map, as I talked about earlier, most of the gestures are mapped to particular things on the mouse. So, like, I can't remember what pinch is now.
It's probably the wheel.
Yeah, so you use the wheel. You use the wheel a lot on the mouse, you see? So I think pinch is done through the wheel, I think. And you also, with the mouse, you end up touching the bottom of the... You can actually use the edges of the screen as a control mechanism as well. So what we do is we map all those things. Some of them are not as obvious as others, but they are all mapped, right? So, for instance, right-click, so press and pull down is right-click on the mouse. Yeah, so there's that. After a while, you sort of get to know the mappings. Okay, so as I say, we have the basic events, right? And then we take that and we provide it in terms of positional information, pointer type, contact ID, etc., and also a particular type of touch as well. Okay, so I'm just going to... Let's just try it. Hi. Well, we can try that. So what I have here is a little program, and it allows me to just do a little paint application, but you can use whatever functionality you want. Let's just run it. Okay, so I can draw with my mouse, and I can draw with my finger. Yeah, it's exactly the same input. You can actually, this screen doesn't do it, but actually the APIs, because this screen's not got a good enough resolution, I think it's a resistive actually, it's so bad. But if you have a good capacitive screen, then as you press harder, you can actually see you can make the the drawing will get the drawing point will get wider on this particular application. But basically, you can, you know, so you can draw with your finger, you can draw with a pen. It's actually a pen on this machine, and you can draw with a and you can draw with a mouse. Sorry? I think there is. I think, let me have a look. Let's go and have a look. So, here we go. This is, you know, you've got these are the mappings, right? So this is what you actually get: pointer up, pointer down, move, etc., etc. Double tap. I didn't try the double tap. And so that's what you actually get back. This is what you're listening for. These are the calls you get back, yeah. And then you can just use. Doesn't matter whether you're using, you know, your finger or whether you're using pen or whatever. You get the same information back in your application. So we take care of all the mappings underneath that. Okay, so the next area is the whole area of tiles and notification. How do we drive the tiles, and how do we get notifications on the tiles? Okay, obviously we talked earlier about making the application move with tiles and notifications in it. And the basic tiles allow as overlay status on top. You can have different formats of tiles, of course, and you can also have up to 99 of these predefined little glyphs that to go on the bottom. They're always legible. We always work out what background color they should be in order for them to be visible. We call them badges, as you can see here. And this is an example of sets of badges on this application here. You can see how they can be made to change. Tiles and secondary tiles. I showed you pinning earlier on and how to do how we actually pinned and generated secondary tile. I've already done that, so I won't do that again. And then toasts. Toasts generate transient information, so they pop up, like a standard pop up. Gets your users the attention very, very quickly. It's yet another control. The interesting thing about toasts and notifications is they actually use a back end subsystem that we provide. So the controls are much the same as all the other controls, and this talks about the controls. And then we provide sets of templates again, you know, for the controls. I'll skip through that. But actually what it does is it sits on top of this Windows Push Notification Services. And what the Windows Push Notification Services are is a set of cloud services we're providing, actually it's part of Live. And what it does is you send stuff up to the push notification service, and then we will actually then mirror that back down to your application again, right? So it's actually using a Microsoft service in between. It handles the communications backwards and forwards with your application. It's very scalable. We use it today for a lot of the mail, the instant messaging stuff. It's a free service. We're going to provide it to you for free.
Work in offline mode also?
No, you have to be connected because it's coming back in. I'll show you a picture of how it works in a minute. Yeah? Okay, so this is how it actually works. So the Windows 8 client machine is on the left-hand side. You have your application. It's running away. You have your own back-end cloud service. So you have to have your own service. You also have a push notification service, which you register with. And then back on the client platform, there's a notification client, which we provide, actually. Okay, so the way it works is you request from the client, from the control, a URI. Okay, you then register with your cloud service. Your cloud service registers with the push notification service, yeah? And then that actually authenticates back with the client platform to make sure it's a valid linkage. Okay. And basically what happens is that when your cloud service wants to notify your application,
it doesn't have to do all the handshaking down the client. It just sends something, the push notification service, that then just sends the data out to the client, and you get the toast up. Now, if you're offline, of course, it won't come through. But when you go back online, then it will automatically come through, and you'll get the notification.
But can an app, Metro Style app, make toast notifications without?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It can. Yeah, that's just a standard toast without using the notification service. So you can schedule a toast to come up through the client, through the Windows 8 client, and Windows at WinRT. So WinRT will take control of that.
It's called toast because it pops up.
Yes. Pretty much. Again, I'll skip over that. Then finally, just to cover the whole contract side of things. So search and sharing are just on the left hand, on the right hand side of the screen. They're always there, and this is how the search actually works. You've seen this. The search is scoped to actually what it is on the main application of the area of the screen, and search will then also provide suggestions. Now, of course, you have to put the suggestions in your code underneath before it will come back and give you the search queries. But it will actually do some auto completion out of your application. We do that. You don't have to go through all that trouble.
Is this something like iFilter or SharePoint that I can actually implement the search within my application?
Yes. Data? Yes, it does. You just give the application data, and it will do the search, and it will do the substring of the search of the things inside the data string you've sent. Yeah. So, and it will try and do auto complete.
Okay.
Yeah. You understand? And when you actually fire up the search window on the right-hand side, it gives you a list of all the applications that have implemented the search contract, so you can just click on one of those, and it will then come up with that search. Okay, yeah, it's not autocomplete, it's suggestions. So you get suggestions, comes back from the application you've selected on the screen, and those come back up. Now you can actually get the whole result come back. If you specify in control, you actually want to return the whole result. So if you've got somebody tapping something at weather, you can actually return the whole thing as part of the search bar. So you don't even have to do a toast notification or whatever. It's just another way of providing the search information where the user's eye is. This is basically how you implement it. It's very simple. You have a Windows search category. You handle the events. And then you activate it. And you do the search on the bottom. So it's just calling the control again, the search control. And then finally, sharing. We actually do all the work to allow the sharing. And I showed you the sharing earlier on. So you obviously have to be both a source and a destination. This is the source for the share. Okay. So you have a data transfer manager. You get the view, get the data into it, and then you wait for somebody to request for the data as part of the share, and then you pass the information back. Yeah, so that's the source with the data, and then the other side is just a simple, really, the actual the target for the data. So we're providing a ton of controls, which make it really, really easy to use all these things. You don't have to do any programming at all to speak of, just a few lines of code, 3 or 4 lines of code in each one, in order to support this functionality. And it makes it very easy to build Metro-style applications supporting all these things. It also will support the whole area of the hardware as the new hardware comes out. We're very keen to make sure that applications are built with the new hardware. And so we're very keen to make sure that people don't go off and write device drivers and so on and so forth, which then don't work with applications. So we're going to try very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Any other questions?